Welcome to Unfrozen. I'm Dan Zafarik.
And I'm Greg Lindsay, and welcome to episode 99, The Venetian Scheme. We are taping here live in Venice, here in a beautiful apartment here, actually, in the middle of Castello. It's Dan and I are joined by our special guests, just like we were back in the day, by our friend Alex von Siebenthal, who is also en route today as we speak. But here right now we're joined by volume contributor and graphic artist Michelle Champagne, and founder of All Things Urban, Anastasia Sokolova, which I just sort of mangled my way through. But we'll hear from them in a little bit. But first, before we get into the meat of this, we do have an actual guest here who will give you the best preview, I guess you can get, on the Biennale itself, which is the curator, Carlo Rotti, who was kind enough to take some time. We recorded him before we arrived here in Venice to talk about his theme for the Biennale. But first, Dan, we're so back.
We're so back. The boys are back in town, and this time we have girls with us.
Well, I wasn't going to go that route with it, but yes, there we are. Okay. Well, we will hear from our special guests in a little bit, and we will discuss what it is we're looking forward to. But first, let's queue up Carlo Rotti, who, of course, is the director of the MIT Sensible City Lab, who, of course, is the creator of his own firm, Carlo Rotti Associati, and who, literally took time out of installing the Biennale itself to talk a bit about intelligence, natural, artificial, collective.
Little, yellow, different.
Let's hear from Carlo. Carlo, thank you so much for joining us, especially from this very busy time during the installation period. I guess the first question we have for you is, maybe to me it's the obvious one, which is, why has the Biennale never tackled technology as a topic head on before? Like, it feels like that when you were named curator, this was the obvious outcome, that intelligence would always be the theme and that it would be centered that way. And I was curious, was that your remit from the very beginning, or did you have to convince them?
Well, first of all, thanks a lot for having me. I'm in the middle of the street here in Venice. But, you know, this Biennale is not much about technology. There is also technology, but if you look at the title, intelligence, intelligence, natural, artificial, collective, you know, what we see in Venice is actually how together we can combine different threads, including technology. But also it's about, again, natural intelligence and collective intelligence. And to do it in order to tackle probably the most important challenge today, and it's about adaptation.
And I note that, this is Dan Zafarik, thank you for joining. I note that the spelling of the title, you know, is a variation on the normal spelling of intelligence, G-E-N-S, to imply, I guess, that we mustn't forget humanity when we're talking about deploying technology to solve global problems. Is that kind of the idea? Maybe you can explain a bit about the title.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, usually the Biennale has two titles, the Italian title and the English title. And we like the idea of having only one, so we went to the common root. It's the real root behind intelligenza and intelligence. And the idea is that, again, by having only one, there's also this kind of, in the Latin root, there's this kind of gens. Gens is about people, is about multiplicity. So we want to say it's about multiplicity, especially now when people seem to think about intelligence as only one dimension. You know, you say intelligence and people immediately say ChatGPT or something, or LLMs. We wanted to imply about how we need to leverage all forms of intelligence, and those forms of intelligence that have shaped architecture for thousands of years, again, in order to tackle adaptation to a changing planet.
I want to quickly do another process question too as well, Carlo, which is, this is by far, I think, the largest Biennale ever in terms of total number of participants. And you very explicitly did an open call. All willing participants had to go through a single platform to organize it. I'm curious, why so many people? How does that play out in terms of the number of installations and exhibits? What did you gain from doing it this way as opposed to, I suppose, past Biennales where curators work through their networks, et cetera?
Yeah, I always like the idea of trying to use bottom-up dynamics in doing a Biennale. Usually, Biennale is quite top-down. It's about a director, a curator, selecting a few people and inviting them to Venice. And so we started opening a number of salons, you know, actually inviting people. Yes, you're right, for the first time, managed to convince the Biennale to have an open call, sort of an open platform, call for ideas. It was last summer. And that was both incredibly rewarding, but also daunting. Daunting because we were flooded with ideas from all over the world. We had to reply to thousands of emails and suggestions, but at the same time, incredibly rewarding because we managed to discover voices that otherwise we would not have been able to discover. So you will find that the Biennale is also a lot of voices from people who just graduated from the other side of the world. Really a mix of different voices and different. That is what we try to do. I always like this idea of thinking about the Biennale like what Umberto Eco, the great Italian writer and philosopher, would have called an opera aperta, something open that keeps on evolving the bottom-up way.
And I think as part of this inclusiveness, there's a new twist or actually resurgence of an existing or previous program, which is the Critic Corner. We talked to Christopher Hawthorne podcast, and he gave us a bit of a preview of that. What do you think is the role of criticism in the present Biennale as both, something that is an exhibit as well as obviously commentary on the Biennale itself?
Yeah, first of all, let me tell you a little bit about what the Speaker's Corner is. It is a place for discussion. It's in the middle of the section called the Collective Intelligence. And in the Speaker's Corner is a place where every week, almost every day, at the opening every day, there will be different type of conversations. In this conversation, again, some of them came through the call for ideas. Some of them involved Venetians, the local community, students, also big organizations like C40 or UNESCO, the UN, COP30, and so on. And for us, it was an idea to bring, again, conversation and discussion, the starting point for collective intelligence in the core of the Arsenale. And it was an idea to change what usually is something, the beginning. I had a small budget for organizing three conferences called Meetings in Architecture. And I attended some of them in prior biennales, but usually it's architects talking to architects. And here we wanted to enlarge the conversation. So hopefully there will be a conversation really engaging a much broader audience.
Carlo, I would love to hear, you mentioned obviously adaptation several times as the sort of core theme of your biennale. The three forms of intelligence that are portrayed here, what are some of the best participants or exhibits that everyone should see that really bring together those three kinds of intelligence together to tackle adaptation? Because this is a preview episode, so I'm curious, what would be your curatorial highlights that you really think tackled those themes well?
I like the question, but I would say, intelligence by definition is about connections. And so I wouldn't say just it's one project. Well, first of all, a lot of these projects themselves are kind of a network. If you look at the projects, you've got, in many of them, you've got architects, designers, planners, but working with scientists, with social scientists, sometimes with people from agriculture, from fashion, from food, and so from different industries, a lot of writers as well. And so each project usually is a small ecosystem. And then the whole Biennale is an ecosystem with, again, different dimensions. So the way I wouldn't say it's one project. I would say it's more about, for instance, if you're interested in water, there's a project that looked at water purification, there's a beautiful project that involves Liz Diller, a scientist from water, also chefs, in order to purify the water from the lagoon and actually turning that into something we can drink. There's a project looking at water, how we can connect with the waterways in a different way. There's a project looking at water in the Cordillera, more from the point of view of data, big data from all over the world, and many others. The amazing thing is this kind of resonance also expands to the national participations. Again, in a bottom-up way, we had a lot of meetings with the curators of the national pavilions, a little by little. I think this kind of excitement for the theme of adaptation grew. And so you will see a lot of this through both the Cordillera, the Arsenale itself, the Giardini, and many of the national participation. So I wouldn't answer with one project, but more with probably like a network. And it depends on your interest, but you'll find many of those. In a few days, we'll kind of unveil four, you could say, clusters that again cross through all the different parts of the Biennale. That is important because sometimes at the Biennale, you find a disconnect between different national participations or between the national participations and international exhibition. And this year, it was more about orchestrating. Can we, intelligence about creating connections? And that's what we try to achieve.
That's an obvious follow-up to that one is what is sort of your hopes, I guess, for the takeaways from this year's Biennale? Because in addition to the ongoing criticism about what are Biennales for, you also have, I think, probably the most ambitious set of public programming we've ever seen. And to your point, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing Jeff West in conversation with there, lots of outside the profession. Is there a way, I guess, to continue these conversations afterwards? Do you hope to build some sort of structure or carry it forward? Or, how do we get architecture out of this insular every 2 years conversation that it has with itself?
Well, you're right. The Biennales are changing. Certainly, when the Biennales started at the very beginning, Biennales were about showcasing what people were doing. But hey, sorry, we don't need that. Now we can look at that in real time, on social media, on different platforms. And so the Biennale, I think, is not about sharing existing knowledge. It's more about how we can create new knowledge across a certain discipline. To do that, we need to work together. And so that's a little bit the challenge. This year, there is a manifesto that over 250 people signed from this year Biennale about adaptation, about how really the key challenge today is adaptation. And in climate, people talk about mitigation, reducing emissions. That's still very important. But let's face it, today, things are, a lot of things are happening and changing at the global level. Temperature, sea levels, and extreme events. Some parts of the US are becoming uninsurable, as we know, in Florida and California and other parts of the US. And so architecture there is the core of it. It's about the built environment, how we can transform the built environment. To do that, we need to be together. So I think Biennales are becoming more and more a place to develop new knowledge, but also to be a call for action. And that's also what is manifesto that we launch and with all the participants from the who signed in from the Biennale is about.
Speaking of adaptation, I know this wasn't necessarily on the agenda when the planning for this Biennale began, but obviously, and not to put too much importance on US politics, but we are now living in a changed world that has, in the last 100 days, become very strange indeed, with shadows of former imperialist or colonialist eras. I know that a lot of the content of the previous Biennale was deliberately critical of those types of ambitions. Now that they seem to be resurfacing again, amidst all the other climate challenges that we've already outlined, do you think that this affects any of the presentations that have already been prepared or the exhibition at all? I know you don't have control directly over the national pavilions, but I'm just wondering if it's changed the atmosphere at all, since we've kind of entered a strange era of neocolonialism once again.
Look, I think there's certainly a lot of changes happening in the world, not only in the US, but in many different countries. But looking at that, to me, it makes the problem of adaptation even more urgent. If some countries stop thinking and focusing on mitigation, then adaptation becomes even more important. So somehow, yes, we didn't expect a lot of these changes when we started the Biennale, but I would say that that somehow puts even more emphasis on what you're trying to do again, on coming together with different type of intelligence from different disciplines in order to tackle how do we adapt to change.
Going back to the structure of the Biennale again for a moment, because that's of course another sort of like meta discussion about how the Biennale sort of spreads across Venice. This year, the International Pavilion in the Giardini is closed, I believe, for renovations. You can correct me if I'm wrong. How did that affect in terms of your curatorial strategy, in terms of using the city itself as an installation site for the Biennale, and what can visitors expect? Will there be more dispersed projects around, or how should one tackle it besides the Corderie and the Arsenale?
Yeah, totally. And by the way, sorry, I'm sitting in the middle of the street in Venice, so perhaps you're hearing a bit of noise and the line is not great. But precisely for that, I'm going through from one project to the other one because, as you're saying, we were lacking the central pavilion. That is usually almost 50% of the whole exhibition space. And so we say, well, what about turning Venice into a lab? And so you'll find projects, of course, in the Giardini outside, outdoor. You'll find projects in the Arsenale, but also projects in Piazza San Marco in the middle of the city, and with the two universities, UF and Ca' Foscari, and in other parts. So basically, Venice. And I think there's something quite interesting about Venice. Since Ruskin came to Venice and wrote The Stones of Venice, I believe 1848, a lot of people have been trying to think about how Venice could be saved. But there's something interesting about this city. Venice is an example of adaptation, probably the oldest example of geoengineering, you know, changing the lagoon, something that wasn't designed for humans, into something that where humans could thrive. And so somehow there's something beautiful about Venice becoming like a lab where different ideas, different designs, different solutions for adaptation can be tested.
And it's clear that, of course, you know, Venice is a charming and beautiful place and a great place for people to convene. But it seems that your argument would be that rather than being a contradictory or ironic kind of destination, in fact, it is the most appropriate kind of destination for this discussion, because Venice is very much at risk from these challenges that you're trying to address through the content of the Biennale.
Yeah, absolutely. Venice is, as we were saying, you know, it's kind of the perfect. I mean, there's one of the projects in the Biennale. It involves a great climate engineer such as Franz Solar, great climate scientist, Sonia Sarivirazzi and her team at ETH in Zurich, and also Michelangelo Pistoletto, the artist. And, you know, Sonia, for instance, looked at how the climate of Venice could be in 50 or 100 years. And, you know, Venice somehow, again, is one of the most fragile cities, is kind of the ideal place for this discussion and for this discussion to happen about how do we adapt.
Yes, I think it's telling that Venice's contribution to the Osaka 2025 Expo has the tagline, the world's oldest smart city. So it's very apropos. But Carla, I want to ask again for listeners here who are going to the Biennale, how is it structured in terms of their experience going through the Arsenale? You mentioned earlier that there's going to be sections. So will intelligence be represented sort of in each piece as stated in sort of the title, and then they're sort of brought together? Or how did you sort of approach it from an organizing principle?
It's interesting you're asking this. You know, you can hear the noise. I just left the street and enter. You hear the noise here. We're in the middle of the Arsenale. Unfortunately, I can't show you the images. But you know, the beginning is about climate. It's about population, two of the key variables for the future in terms of architecture. And then from there, yes, you're right. We divide it into sections: natural intelligence, artificial intelligence, collective. And then the final section is about can we actually live outside of our planet? And our position is very different than what some people think. Is that outer space is not really for us to live, but it's still a great place to taste, to test something we can then bring back to Earth. Actually, Martin Rees, the astronomer royal, one of the greatest astrophysicists and physicists in the world from the University of Cambridge, writes a beautiful essay for the catalogue about this, this is about learning about our planet. Don't think about going outside somewhere else to live. There's no plan or planet B. And so those are the sections. But the reality is, when you're walking through the Arsenale, as I'm doing right now, there's a blend. And the blend is because, yes, it's easier to separate into three different types of intelligence, but there's connections. And intelligence itself is about creating new connections, almost like a network. So the idea in the Arsenale starts a bit rarefied and then gets very, very dense in the middle. But it's almost like a living organism, again, that will you go through seamlessly through all these different chapters.
Thank you for that very exciting and concise description. I think everyone's very excited about this this exhibition being mounted at this time. What do you think is the riskiest thing that has been undertaken by an exhibitor or the collective group that you are, I don't want to say nervous about, but that you have? You anticipate that there might be some controversy around, or that people will object to or write about a lot and get it wrong. Is there anything where you're kind of like worried that it's going to be a red button issue or area?
No, look, I think you want also controversy, because it's about a conversation and somebody has to disagree. But I think the only risk I see is somebody who doesn't engage with the others. Again, the design, and you will see it also, the design of the exhibition that was done by Saab in Berlin. And we picked Saab because, you know, they, with their designs, they've been able to really to reach a broader audience than just architects. So this becomes like a network or a living organism. And I think the only thing is the only risk. And I haven't seen projects yet that where that happens. But basically, the only risk is not to engage with the others. Is again not to be able to link and to relate to the rest.
Right, Carlo. Thank you as well for the inadvertent preview of the Arsenale we've been getting while having this conversation. One last question for you. I asked this to Hashim Sarkis back in 2021, and I'm always curious with every curator thinks. Obviously, there's a limit to the scope that you can do with your own Biennale, but where do you think the Biennale goes from here from an architectural perspective? I mean, my experience is limited, but say 15 years ago, it was very much focused on form, and it feels like over the last decade, the various curators have pushed thematically into wider and wider interpretations. I mean, Leslie Locos 2 years ago was, really about sort of architecture that had been unbuilt because it was basically a laboratory of the future for different populations, for different people who'd been marginalized. I'm curious, where do you think the Biennale should go after yours, and what are sort of the themes that it still needs to tackle that it hasn't done in the last, well, 45 years since the architecture biennales began?
Yeah, look, I think it seems to me that, by the way, there's a bit of noise. I mean, by the way, just to tell you, I'm at the very entrance of the Arsenale. You will see it is totally flooded and it will also be very hot. You'll see it next week when it opens, which is actually almost the climate of Venice in 100 years. I'm walking through that. That's why there's a bit of noise and a bit of voices. I would say, for me, it seems to me there is something that we're starting to realize. Again, it's about utopia or oblivion, as Bucky Fuller would have said at the time. And so if you keep on looking at form or smaller issues, then it's going to be oblivion. Already today, architecture doesn't have a big impact on the planet. I mean, Rem Koolhaas himself, he made that point in his Biennale. But actually, if we can look at architecture again as a mechanism to transform the built environment and to adapt to a changing planet, changing from a climate point of view, from a social point of view, we've seen a lot of transformations that are discussed at the Biennale, then they can be at the center. And that's not the theme for one Biennale. I mean, that could be the theme for really architecture at the center in the future. Like Bucky Fuller would have said, that is could be utopia.
Utopia or oblivion, a very fitting thematic set of stakes. Carlo, thank you so much again for taking the time to join us, especially as you observe and review the Arsenale under construction. We really appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you. I just bumped into Beatrice Colomine and Mark Quigley, who are here at the entrance of the Arsenale. So I'll see you very soon. And thank you for having me.
We can't wait. Thank you,
Thank you,
Carlo.
Carlo.
Bye-bye.
Oh.
All right. That was fascinating, Dan, although Carlo did totally dodge the question of what it is we should see. And so we're going to go around the horn here with you, me, and our special guests with Michelle and Anastasia, who you heard from in a moment. But yeah, what are you looking forward to seeing? This is our what? Our fourth or this is our third Biennale and 99th episode in the Unfrozen era. So what are you looking forward to?
Well, I mean, I think a couple of the pavilions, I'm going to steal a bit from actually one of our other episodes, which was Christopher Hawthorne, who recommended, always said that some of the Central European republics and Belgium were going to have a strong showing. Although I do not know the content of this year's pavilions, I can attest that last year's, or rather last Biennales, were pretty strong. I guess I'm kind of cautiously looking forward to the U.S. pavilion, only because I don't know how they can approach the concept of vernacular timber construction in yet another way. But the concept is porch, but I think they're kind of viewing it in a more metaphorical sense, which is a gathering place where people get to know their neighbors and exchange ideas. We'll see how that comes across in physical reality. I'm interested in that as well.
All right. Well, this is where. So true to form, once again, we're here in our house, and our housemates. We've Shanghaied them into this episode, and they are so game to join us. So I will call upon Anastasia. Thanks for coming on Unfrozen. What is it you're looking forward to? Because she is, of course, a veteran of the European Urbanist Conference circuit, and so I'm dying to know what Anastasia has in mind.
Thank you for inviting. Well, I'm looking forward to the diversity of voices and plurality of talents represented here, because I think this Biennale will be unique in terms of this open call they did and the variety of generations, talents, and views represented in the show also at Arsenale. But I'm also looking forward to see how they will work with the Venetian space, and like especially like this Venice as a lab, and how they will interact maybe with local communities, how we'll work with the topic of resilience and circularity, obviously climate resilience. And this is where I'm curious to see what the national pavilions will be showing, how different nations will show what they do in terms of the climate resilience and climate crisis we're facing. And as always, meeting new and old friends, connecting and Garibaldi and everywhere in this huge apartment we have. And and two more conversations like this one.
I know. I'm personally excited for episode like 99 and a half, where we just turn on the mic in the middle of an after party here and see what we pick up there. But before we get to that, I want to invite Michelle, who of course is also my girlfriend, who is here joining us. I feel like this is the hard launch of Michelle as my girlfriend here on Unfrozen. So it's good to have you for that. But also, you brought notes. Michelle is literally, as we're doing this, scrolling through her phone full of notes. So Michelle, what are you looking forward to seeing?
Well, thanks for the invite. And yes, I am a graphic artist, and so I am detail-oriented. And so my recommendations are very precise. What I'm looking forward to here at the Biennale is something that, yeah, listeners have heard about before. Some of the programming by Christopher Hawthorne, who is a senior critic at Yale University's School of Architecture. He and his colleagues have organized Speaker's Corner, which you've talked about. I'm really into that public program, and I'm really into public discourse for architecture and how it relates to larger publics. I'm also, in line with that, interested by Volume Magazine, for whom I've been contributing for ages, based in Amsterdam. It's an architecture and urbanism and everything in between magazine of interest, and it is published by Arcus Foundation and Neue Institut, which is a fantastic cultural center in Rotterdam. They have basically three interventions that they're launching through different events. They will be curated by Stefan Peterman and Marieke van der Hoeven and Francesco del Inconsenti. That's a name I've probably also mashed a little bit. But what I find interesting about these events is that they're questioning very specifically the bubble that biennales can get into and the separation that creates between architecture and larger publics. And so I'm really interested in seeing that. So I'd like to head over there. A few other very detail-oriented things. The Dutch Pavilion interests me immensely. Sidelined, a space to rethink togetherness, is in the Gardini, and it's looking at queer culture in sports bars. I'm really interested in how sports infrastructure and facilities and what are more or less sports bars and places for social habitation, how they tackle this and how they represent that. So I'd like to go to the Dutch Pavilion. I'd also like to go to the Canadian Pavilion, which is run by, some not colleagues of mine, but people who have gone to the University of Toronto and Toronto Metropolitan University, looking at how living systems can embody fabrication methods for architecture, no matter what the material may be. So that's one other note. And the last detail I guess I would mention is the On Storage exhibition at the Applied Arts Pavilion, which is presented by the Biennale, but also the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. It is curated by a former colleague of mine and still friend of mine, Brendan Cormier, who is the chief curator at V&A East, along with Diller, Scofidio, and Renfro. So those are the very specific, very detail-oriented things I wanted to mention, because sometimes we're overwhelmed by the programs that do exist overall, by the catalog, which is immense this year, which, Anastasia mentioned. So I want to poke at a few very specific pavilions and things to do.
But I completely agree with you on this bubble topic and how important I think is for architects and for anyone to work across different disciplines. And I think it's very it's exciting for me to see how in this exhibition a lot of different professions and niches will be shown. And I think what Carla Raiti said, that they try to bring different types of experts and professionals to show that we cannot solve this crisis and issue while we work in silos. So I'm really curious to see how it will be represented also in terms of curation, in terms of the show, and how all these voices will be shown and how they hopefully will be heard. And so when we move forward, there is more collaboration, co-creation, and collective intelligence.
There you go. I say certainly it's the collective that's the one that I'm most interested in on this one. No, those are, thank you both. Those are excellent recommendations. And it is, I think the wild card in this is we're about to find out is like how many people are in town. We're here because this is where our little corner of the universe comes to talk to itself. But now there's more people than ever with the number of participants. So I'm really dying to see how that adds to the conversation overall. Personally, the one exhibit I want to see, given my own interests, as we've heard ad nauseum, is, apparently Carlo has brought in a design firm called Sub that's most famous for doing Balenciaga runway shows. And they have, they've created an app, and it's called Spatial Intelligence. And they took AI, and they trained it on models, and they trained it on text, and supposedly they've built the equivalent of a chatbot to talk to you about the Biennale. And, you know, number one, I'm curious about, like, how does it actually execute? And number two, I am curious about, I'm basically very curious about how this app of spatial intelligence is going to play out, because, yeah, this goes also back to the core finding of my report in the sense of every space is going to have AI attached to it. I'm dying to know, despite Carlo's protestations at the beginning of our interview here, that this is not, in fact, the Smart City Biennale. His own firm has been sending me emails about their various activations here, and they're all technology-based. So I am very curious how to see how the profession wants to grapple with the artificial piece of this, and whether they can do so in any really meaningful human way, or whether we're going to get apps that basically regurgitate in the sum total of text produced by this and then spit it back out again. So that's something that comes across. And it'll be curious to see like how many of these are really thoughtful interventions. I thought the Biennale got off on a bad start. No hate on the Belgians. But, you know, when their curator is giving quotes to Edward Heathcote at the FT of like, the trees are cyborgs, I'm a little worried about that. You know, we might see a little flattening of some of these kinds of themes here. But I don't know. But it will be interesting to see how this carries forward, because I'm most excited about the public programming. I love a good conference. That's my entire milieu. And this has the most conference programming of any Biennale that I've been to. In addition to Speaker's Corner, which we've talked about ad nauseum, like there's going to be Jeff West is going to be one of the opening speakers, the physicist who of course worked on work about showing how cities scale, talking about, I think about like insect populations and how that plays out with like evolutionary prospects for humanity given, you know, ongoing bee deaths and things. So we're going to see some really interesting stuff how this plays out. So, I don't know, but yes, but we are here, we are not here to, like, you know, chart the future of the world. I think we're here to, like, yeah, basically dance about architecture, right?
We're here to bear witness and do slightly better than a chatbot at interpreting what goes on at the Biennale and in the architecture world in general.
Well, I don't know. Well, I guess we will leave it there here. So, yeah, we're going out. It's currently Wednesday evening here in Venice, as you listen to this. We're going to the San Marco Arts Center, I believe, in the Procurie, which is redesigned by, Norman Foster? Who did it? Someone blue chip redesigned that space, and so we're going to go there, check out their exhibitions, and start to see as the entire architectural world assembles on scene. As Anastasia put it very memorably, when we go to dinner at Nivoti later, everyone will be there, will be an architect, and they will all be dressed in black, and that's the Biennale. All right, this is episode 99, again, The Venetian Scheme. We will be back with episode 100, our special extra bonus issue that will be packed with interviews taken in the field in the Giardini and the Arsenale with whoever Dan and I manage to buttonhole. Perhaps there will be after parties here. Perhaps there will be people we run into at Nivoti. Perhaps I'll just shove a microphone in people's faces. We will see, but we will be back. This is a podcast that started the Biennale, and, well, it's not going to end with the Biennale, but it continues there. So stay tuned.